Hello, hello, fearless listeners. Are you ready for another episode of Let Fear Bounce? It's the podcast that's all about conquering challenges and facing our fears. I'm your host, Kim Langling, and each week we'll dive into inspiring stories, expert insights, and practical tips to help you turn your fear into your greatest ally. So sit back, relax, grab that cup of coffee, and let's discover how to make fear our bouncing board towards a life filled with endless possibilities right here on Let Fear Bounce. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Let Fear Bounce. This is Kim Langling, your host, and I am so happy that you are deciding to spend just a small part of your day with myself and my special guest today, author Spencer Seculin. When he is not on the road as a paramedic or studying, he is most likely writing. He is born and raised in Ontario, Canada, and he fell in love with books at a young age. He's been published in several anthologies, and this is awesome. He took second place in the 2022 Writers of the Future contest, first quarter of that. And that's a pretty darn prestigious and esteemed contest. And he happens to be the second author that's been a guest on my show that was a winner of that contest. How exciting is that? So Spencer, welcome to Let Fear Bounce.
Thank you for having me, Kim.
I've been looking forward to this, and it was so fun to find out that you're the second author of that contest. You know, what are the odds of that? Obviously pretty high that I get to talk to two of you in less than 2 months. So congratulations, belated congratulations on that, because that's pretty awesome stuff right there. And I can only imagine the people that you met and what you were able to take away from that experience when you attended.
No, it was a great time.
So for those folks out there, share with the listeners what that contest is, and if you know why it's out there. It's been around for quite some time, and you know, you got to go to Hollywood for this. So share a little bit about that experience.
Well, so the contest is called the Writers and Illustrators of the Future Contest. So it's actually for writing and for writers and for artists as well. So how it works is every quarter, so four quarters of the year, there's, you know, an open contest to any non-professional authors and illustrators to submit their work to the contest to potentially win. So it's for non-professional authors and illustrators, and there's certain criteria for that. So there's thousands of entries. It's been around for 40 years at this point, I think. And yeah, the prize includes, you get published in the anthology, which is gorgeous. And you also get paired up with one of the artists that wins, because there's 12 writers that win over the year, and there's also 12 artists that will win. And so one of the winning artists will make an illustration for your story, and that will be in the actual anthology as well. So that's really cool. But anyway, you get published the anthology, you get paid for it, of course, professional rates, and you get to go to Hollywood for about a week, a bit over that, depending. And you just do a workshop basically with the judges and the best-selling writers that they have on their panel, on their, as judges and as instructors as well. So people like KJ Anderson, Tim Powers, Robert Sawyer, all sorts of very big writers. So it's a cool contest. And I figured, yeah, why not submit to it, right?
Well, exactly.
Yeah. And I guess it was started, basically just as a way of really giving a leg up to new writers, right? Just helping people get started and giving people somewhere to start as well, and celebrating new writers as well too, right? Because it's easy, it's tough to get into, and you know, this is something that really helps, that's for sure.
You know, and it's tough to get into, but it's also kind of tough at times because it's quite isolating to be an author. It's tough at times to keep yourself motivated, to keep going. Have you found that to be true for you at times?
Sure, validation's great, and it was nice to go there and, you know, basically we have this insane experience based around something that was a very, very much an isolated thing I would do in my spare time. Right. So that's great. I'd say for me, writing started out as a therapy almost, or I wouldn't say a hobby, because I don't like calling it. It sounds almost diminutive if I call it a hobby. So, but I really started writing as a means of, you know, helping myself and giving myself an escape, I guess. I wouldn't say an escape, but just some kind of other avenue in life, something that's unrelated to whatever else I'm doing, a place where I can go and shut everything else off and just, you know, have fun making something. And I make it for me first. So it's not about writing to get it out there. It gets harder when you get published, because then you start thinking about selling it or getting things out there. But I think my best writing is always when I'm doing it just for me, just for fun, just to have that satisfaction of taking something in your head and putting it down on paper and having an actual story at the end of it, right? That aspect of creation. So, but yes, it can get lonely, and it can get a bit, if you're getting rejected over and over again from places, it can get a bit, sometimes feel a bit personal, but that's just part of, comes with it, basically. It's just part of the game. But that comes down to your reasons and why you do it.
Exactly. Yes, the reasons of why you do it. And I've found you got to have a thick skin because rejections will come. No one's a perfect writer. Yeah, those rejections, they can sting, but I've found that like critiques and things like that, I've sent in work specifically to be critiqued. Have you ever sent anything in to be critiqued or anything like that, whether it's professional critique or someone that you know?
Yeah, I do it quite. I basically do it with any story I write, mainly the short stories, because those are easy for a turnaround. You can send them to someone and get back pretty fast. So yeah, basically every short story I write, I send it to, at the very least, to a bunch of my writer friends or people that I know that like to read those kind of stories, and just get their general feedback of what do you think, right? And I might send a checklist of things like, what did you think of this, or were issues with that, blah, blah, blah. But bottom line is, I want to know, is it, does it suck? Is it good? What do you think, right?
Right.
And so I do that for some informal, non-professional feedback, and that's always helpful. But I also sometimes I do send it to an editor that I know, and I, of course, for a fee, which is, again, that's your job. So of course I'll pay a bit for that. So, and it's that feedback, I just, like you experience, is extremely helpful, because they pick up on things that I just don't see, right? Because they can, they've edited a lot of stories, they've read a lot of stories from billions of different people. So they really fine-tune their senses. They really hone in on those things that aren't obvious to you on the first pass. But when you look at their feedback and then take a look at your story, you can kind of start to see, ah, that's what they mean.
Or you think, oh, why didn't I do that to begin
Yeah. And then you
with?
kind of remember that. You remember that stuff the next time. Like,
Right.
sure, you can't remember everything, and you can't just automatically change how you write, but over time it slowly percolates in, and you get better, basically. And
Exactly.
you only really learn from your mistakes anyway. Like, if everyone just said, oh, your story's great, well, it's not going to change anything. So, but it's the errors, it's the shortcomings, the retooling it to make it work, that kind of stuff, that sucks and it's hard. But in hindsight, it's fun at the end of the game, right? It's satisfying. And then that's the stuff that you basically, that's how you become a better writer, or better at anything, frankly, is by learning from where you're inadequate and where you need to rectify it. So,
Right. And we all need to learn. We all need to learn.
yep.
There's always something. Let me rephrase that. There's always something new to learn, no matter what stage in life you're in or what it is you do in life. There's always something to learn. So you had mentioned, and it caught my attention, that you write at times for therapy. What did you mean by that?
I wouldn't say, like, I don't write as a, say, a replacement for professional therapy. I'm not saying it's that to me, but by therapy, I use that term loosely, in terms of it's comforting, it's a place of solace almost for me, a peaceful environment. So, because it's something I've been doing for, well, not too long, maybe the last 10, 12 years, maybe I've been doing it for. Basically, when I started university, I started doing it, really. And it was a lot of fun, and it's still fun, and it's something I feel like I'm compelled to do almost every day, right? And if I don't get that in, I feel like something's missing. So, maybe it's like I'm addicted to writing. I'm not sure, but something about always coming back to that every day, usually early in the morning, just sitting down, and I couldn't care less about what's happening 2 or 3 hours from now, or what else I have to do in the day. It just doesn't exist to me in that moment. So I get to step out of time and step out of whatever issues I'm going through, and just be in this place that's been with me for the last 10, 12 years. It's almost like returning to a, stepping back into a room that's separate from everything else. And it's always the same way, or it's always welcoming, and the fire is always going, that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
So,
Yes, you sink into it.
exactly. Yeah. So,
That's how I always feel when I get into that groove. That's what I say. If I fall into that groove, I've literally fallen into it, and everything else disappears. And then when you come up for air, maybe an hour, maybe 2 or 3 hours later, you come up and you're like, oh, you're almost surprised at where you're at.
Yeah, like where did that time go? So,
Right.
yeah, the flow state's great when you get into that.
Yes, it is. I enjoy when that happens. It doesn't happen every time I write, but when it does, I enjoy it. I enjoy it. So you are a paramedic by trade. Is that what you do currently?
Yeah, it's one of the things I do currently.
What else do you do then? You're a busy guy.
So yes, I work as a paramedic in Canada at least, and I do the writing on the side as a, you know, a side thing. So, but currently I'm also in medical school in Dublin, actually. So I'm currently in Dublin right now, Ireland,
Oh, okay.
Not Canada. So basically I am studying medicine right now, seeing how that goes, because I figured I'd give it a shot.
Thank you for doing that, because I know quite a few EMTs and paramedics where I'm located in the United States. And I know that it can be very hard, and that there are times that you end up carrying a lot with you emotionally.
Yeah.
Does any of that carry into your writing? Any of those emotions that you might be putting in a box when you're done with your shift and you flick that switch and you're like, okay, done now. How do you, or do you use some of that emotion and energy in your writing?
I wouldn't say I've explicitly, you know, transferred something like directly from a certain situation into any writing I do, but I certainly see a lot of hints of that or subtle undercurrents of it, mainly in the content of my stories. Like I get more in detail in the medical side of things, or in the, you know, I in the in terms of that aspect of the character's perspectives, right? So I might go a bit deeper into that, or into more like they are more on the heavy side in terms of content, right? In terms of the heaviness of it, as it were, from a standpoint of, is it a dark story or a very carefree story? So I tend to go more so on things are very serious, you know, and get worse. And then at the end, they get better, but things get really bad usually. So I don't know, maybe that's some of that dark, the dark humor of being in emergency medicine kind of comes in. I'm not sure,
it sounds like it might be.
Well, I've always liked
from
stories
an outsider outside your bubble.
From an outsider,
it sounds like it might be.
Maybe, but it could be just because growing up, I also read basically I made a jump from basically middle grade stuff to adult fantasy. That's more dark fantasy. While I was still in like grade 6 or 7, I was reading my mom's entire library of adult fantasy novels and stuff like that, which was, they were great, you know, things like Terry Brooks and stuff like that, like classic fantasy stories that are fantastic. But so I've always been reading things that can get pretty messy and the stakes are very high. So that's the stuff I just enjoy to write and read as well. So sometimes I do carry those things into stories. I think it's more so just in a general vague sense, nothing explicitly. So I think we all put a bit of ourselves in characters, right? In some way, in many ways, maybe we don't notice it, but there's, you know, a human being isn't just one strict personality, right? There's lots of different facets to ourselves. And I'm sure some of that comes through in our writing, depending on how you're feeling that day. You know, have I had my coffee or not? I don't know. But, you know, I'd say a bit of myself comes out in them. Certainly when I was starting out, there was a lot more of that, like very much, very much from my, like a self-insert almost, right? You're just sticking yourself in the story basically without knowing it half the time. So that happens a bit less now, I would say, or a lot less. But especially starting out, I certainly noticed a lot of the injection of my own personality and problems into it.
Do you go back and I've done this on occasion, I'll go back and read something that I wrote when I first started writing.
Oh, that's so,
and I'll read it and just cringe.
Yep. Yep. I just don't go back and read those.
You just don't do it.
those are scary. It's, you know what? It depends. It could be kind of fun going back and to realize how much you've changed. And also maybe to enjoy some of the stuff you wrote as well. Like, huh, that's great. Or wow, that was pretty good for back then. Right. So it can be almost like nostalgia as well, but it also is painful. Yeah. Cause yeah. You look at it and you're like, I would not be caught dead with this now. Oh my God.
It's like, what was I thinking sending that anywhere?
Yeah. Yeah, that happens to me. If there's something I haven't read for, like I wrote several years ago and I haven't gotten around to editing it, it sometimes happens with things. I'll look at it. I'll be like, wow, like I keep doing this thing, and I've since moved on from that mistake, you know? So it's cool. It's like a time capsule, right?
Yeah,
So.
it is. I started writing 20, and it was surprising to realize this, but 2004, that's when I started and had something, like in the newspaper, published, stuff like that. And I'll look back every once in a while. I did that recently, and I literally cringed and went, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe they put that in the paper."
And it's still out there
And
too.
it's still out there
Yeah.
forever.
Good thing no one reads the old papers, you know.
Oh goodness, yeah, I kind of chuckled, and then saw, certain points where I was like, oh, I've learned to do that better. It gave me quite a few chuckles. Cringeworthy, but I still chuckled. Still had to
Yeah,
chuckle about
gotta have a humor about it too,
Oh
yeah.
goodness, yes. Yeah. Otherwise you'd be too afraid to write. So also in your bio, I see one of the things I noticed was coffee. You're a coffee connoisseur. So bless you on that, fine sir, because
Are you? No.
oh, absolutely. And I
Okay.
drink copious amounts of coffee. Do you have a favorite coffee?
So it's evolved over the years, but my favorite brand is it's called Kicking Horse. I get it in Canada, obviously. You know, it's pretty common up there. But I buy the whole beans. It's a medium blend called, I think it's called Pacific Pipeline. So it's a medium roast. You know, I buy the beans whole, and I hand grind them. Of course, you got to hand grind them, and my old good old fashioned grinder. That's by hand, not electric. And I use a French press for it. Of course, I prefer that. And bit of salt in there too. I find in the grinds, kind of. I've maybe it's placebo, but I've been doing that for a long time.
That
Makes it a bit less.
pulls more of the flavor, correct? Salt.
Yeah, I was told that like it pulled some, it removed some of the sharp edge or bitterness from it. I'm not sure, but I'm sticking with it because, you know, I
Works for
found something
you.
that works. I found what works for me exactly. So I make it like that. I steep it for 4 minutes exactly, usually 4 minutes exactly, and yeah, like it's a ritual,
I
and
was going to
it's.
say, you have your routine down, don't you?
Yeah, I'm sure you do as well, maybe.
Well, of course. Of course. I
No.
like to play around now. I have a regular coffee pot, just a normal, regular coffee pot. I will grind my own beans, not every day like you. I kind of switch it up a lot. I have a French press. I will do that. I have a pour over. I'll do that every once in a while.
Okay.
Depends on the mood I'm in
So you're
and where I need to be when.
fair enough, fair enough.
Yeah. So if speed is the answer that I need, it's just I need caffeine. I will just make a quick pot of coffee, fill up my really big honking mug, and on I go,
What do
Yeah,
you
coffee's a
take in
big
it?
part of my day. Coffee's a big part of my day.
Yeah, how do you take it though? Is it just you just have it straight? Just coffee?
I like dark roast. I like the heavy hitters. The kind that gives you a kick, kicks you awake when you need it. I don't use creamers or half and half or milk or anything like that, but I do like the Starbucks latte coffee. It's like cold coffee, cold brew coffee. I use that as creamer
Huh.
because it has espresso in
Interesting. Oh wow. You're just doubling down on it.
I don't put a lot in, and I don't,
Oh,
it doesn't
okay.
turn
Fair
my
enough.
coffee tan. I probably maybe 2 tablespoons worth, maybe. I don't use a lot because that stuff's expensive, but just enough to give it that extra little taste boost. But that seems to
Yeah.
be what works for me. So, yeah.
Cool.
I had tried. Have you ever tried Death Wish coffee?
No, it sounds pretty serious.
It came out a couple years ago, and I saw it online, and I was like, Death Wish coffee. And it's got, the packaging's black with a skull on it. And I'm like, I'm gonna try that. So I bought like a sampler. I bought like a sampler pack. And I can take, I like strong coffee. This coffee kicked my butt. And I couldn't drink much of it because it was so strong and so much like power in it. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm bouncing off the walls. It's just amazing. Good
Yeah.
stuff, but wow, I couldn't purchase it regularly. No. But I liked it because the name of it, Death Wish Coffee. That tells you a lot right there.
Exactly. It's right on the label.
Yes, indeed. It was fun. So, do you have any animals? Do you have any pets? Well, you're a traveler, so probably not.
I used to, like, I grew up around cats and dogs, so I do prefer cats though over dogs, I'd say. And maybe that's just because my personality has gotten more like a cat, I guess, over the years, where it's more mellow and let's chill out, let's not go for walks in the rain when it's like crazy out. Let's just chillax, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just more like that. But you know, I like both cats and dogs, and I've had cats, you know, and the family, like, you know, my parents and everyone back home, like everyone still has cats and stuff, so I love visiting them, and you know,
Yeah.
so yeah, I'm a cat guy, I'd say.
Well, good for
But
you.
dogs can be nice too. I like a good golden retriever or something like that. That's I always we had those growing up. So I do like the good mid-sized, those really smart mid-sized dogs. I really have a soft spot for, I'd say.
Yeah, they are amazing. All animals are amazing, though, actually. They really are. All right, so moving on now. We've got the important stuff covered. Coffee and animals. You also have in your bio that you've done voiceovers.
Oh yeah, just a bit. It's just that's I'd say that's a hobby, that's for sure.
So how does one find a job to do a voiceover for?
There's a bunch of different things. It's mainly online, unless you go the traditional route and become, you know, an actor and join an actual guild in, or what do they call it? I guess a guild or a, like ACTRA would be the guild, like the group in Toronto or Ontario. So, and that's how you get jobs, is through these professional organizations that are recognized, and there's that route. But there's also a lot of things online for voiceovers, right? There's a lot of websites where it's just free and you can sign up and make a profile. People can share voiceover jobs, like casting calls, mostly for free things, like, you know, little projects people are doing, or YouTube videos, or you know, stuff that you might not get paid for, get paid very little. It's just people come on there and have fun with it.
Right.
So there's a lot of that. And there's also pay to play professional ones where, you know, like voices.com or stuff like that, where actual, you know, companies and people looking for professional voiceovers will go on there and put out casting calls, and actual professional voice actors can apply for those on that website too. So it's a pay to play kind of thing, but that's where you get better paying gigs and professional level gigs as well. And I tried that for a bit too and got some gigs, but it's a lot of work doing voiceovers, I will say. It's like writing, you know, you audition, 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 rejection, 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 and then you get a job, and you know, it might be a big script, and then you got to record it all and revise and edit, you know, sound edit and send it out to the client. But then they want you to change something and record it again, so you got to come back and do it again. And it's just so I have fun with voiceover sometimes, mainly if it's a character. I like doing, you know, animations and stuff. It's kind of fun. But stuff like, you know, corporate narration and stuff like that was just not fun. So
How do people do whole books for audiobooks?
well, they get paid very well for those, for at
Oh,
least for
I'm
the big ones,
sure.
right? Like if you're professional, like it can be pretty good money, but it wasn't for me to pursue super seriously. I had
Yeah.
too many other things going on. But I'll still come back to it now and then because I have a studio and all that stuff, like a simple one, but it's professional quality in terms of the sound I get out. So a little booth, all that.
Oh,
So
yeah. How fun.
it's fun to come back to now and then and audition for a few, you know, informal kind of character things and see what happens. So
So how long all are you in medical school for?
well, this is a 4-year program here in Ireland. They have their The thing I like about Europe is you can do it right out of high school, and for a 6-year program, so you 2 years and then 4 years, right, in university straight out of high school. Unlike say in Canada or the States, mostly where you have to get a degree, that's 4 years, and then you get the privilege to apply alone to medical school and maybe get in it. That's another 4 years plus residency. So I like the European, and frankly, a lot of countries do it that way with straight out of high school 6-year programs. Makes a lot of sense to me. Waste a lot of Doesn't waste as much time, that's for sure,
And money.
but that and money, yeah. So but anyway, this one's a 4-year program for graduates, so it's a graduate medicine program, and yeah, 4 years, and then after that, however long your residency is, wherever you end up going.
So to get over there, I mean, you're going over there for school. Do they provide housing and stuff like that, or is that something you had to find and take care of all on your own and pay for and everything like that?
I gotta do everything on my own, yeah.
That's a big move.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I only take it a few months at a time, so It's not
Oh,
like I'm
okay.
not here for 4 years straight, so I can still come back to Canada and go back to my job and do that for a few months and then come back. So
Okay, gotcha. So what else is coming up for you? Because we're going to get ready to here to wrap up. So what else is coming up for you writing wise for the future? And where can folks find more out about you?
well, firstly, so if anyone wants to find out more about me, they can always just go to my website, spencerseculin.net. That's basically the one-stop shop for everything. That's where you can find my other social media links, or just Google my name, Spencer Seculin, because there's no one, I don't think there's anyone else who has my name. I've yet to find a single person on anything that has Spencer Seculin as a name except for me. So it's kind of cool. But anyway, so that's where to find me. Now, there's a few things coming out this year. So I have published or gotten another short story accepted by a magazine that's been around for a long time. I can't really say which it is yet, because there's a certain process in the whole contract where you can't say anything until they release the table of contents. So I can't say anything yet. But one of my short stories is in that. It's a science fiction short story. I liked it. It's a lot of fun. So that's going to be coming out in the next few months, I guess. There's also a novella length short story that's contradictory. A novella, basically. It's again, fa it's a fantasy one instead. And I'm going to be self-publishing that experimentally, basically, in the next, ideally within the next 6 months, with some artwork by Alexandra Albu, who was one of the winners of that contest as well. She actually illustrated my story that won in the contest. So it's cool to get her to illustrate the cover for something else that I wrote. So we'll collaborate on that, and I'll be self-publishing that. And besides that, I mean, I've got a bunch of stories that are currently out as submissions, and you know how it goes with submissions. You send it, you wait. So there's at least 10 that are 10 or 12, I think, that are just, I'm waiting to hear back on those. So that's always going on. So you never know which one might actually get accepted. And I'm revising a few novels as well, actually, right now. So there's
Awesome.
a trilogy I wrote a few years ago that I'm starting to revise, trying to edit through, because it's about time I return to it. And there's another book based off the short story that won the contest. I'm making a full-length novel based on that story. So a standalone novel, not a series, just a standalone novel. So I'm working on that, a bit at a time. I have to step back and come back to it now and then, right? Just to feel fresh. But that's another thing I'm doing. And then there's another novel that I already wrote that's part of a series that I'm currently sending out to agents, and that is also a lot of waiting too. So long story short is I've got a bunch of big projects that are, they're slow going, but I'm working on them. And there's a few short stories that'll be coming out soon, and a bunch of other short stories that I've either written or am currently writing that may end up on the market in the future as well. So that's about the summary, I'd say.
That's a lot.
I try to focus on one project at a time, but it's hard. So I make a compromise where I'm always writing something new, and then at the same time, I'm always editing something as well. So I'm writing something all the time, but I'm also taking a bit of time to edit something else as well. So I've got both sides going, because otherwise I'll drown it. There's too much to do. So
Yes. I have a
yeah.
couple that I work on simultaneously. So I'll work on one, and they're two totally different types of things. So depends on my mindset of the day. Well, I'm gonna jump in there into that little world for a while. And it might be, then I'll be done for maybe a few weeks. And I'll jump into the other world for a little while, So yeah, I understand that having more than one project going at the same time. Well, this has been awesome. A lot of exciting stuff you got going on. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, as I wrap up, I ask every one of my guests on Let Fear Bounce to toss out a nugget of hope to the listeners, just something that they can tuck away and carry with them for the rest of the day. So, what would your nugget of hope for the listeners be today?
So I've been thinking about that. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, right? Life is tough, right? It can be very tough. I've seen that a lot, my patients, my coworkers, myself as well. There's a lot of times where things are dark, right? It's cloudy out. You don't see the sun, those kind of things. And this is something that my professor actually told me. One of my professors, who's my mentor, ex-military kind of guy, but the way he said to me is that, you know what, the, you know, the sun will it will rise tomorrow, right? You get through today and the sun will rise tomorrow, even if it's behind a cloud. But it still rises, right? Keep showing up, right? You just got to keep showing up.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. The sun will always rise. We might not see it,
Yep, that's there.
it's there. By golly. By golly. Well, thank you. That's a wonderful nugget of hope. I appreciate it. And I'm sure that many out there listening will appreciate it as well. So thank you.
Oh, no problem. I hope they find it helpful.
I'm sure they will. It's a good one. Thank
Again,
you
thanks
so
for
much
having me.
once again for being my guest. This has been fun, a pleasure, and I've learned quite a few things. So awesome sauce. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And everybody out there listening, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Let Fear Bounce. And don't forget, folks, it's on YouTube as well. So hop on over there and subscribe and like the episode. All of the contact information and things for Spencer will be in the show notes and the description notes, depending upon what platform you're on. So, hey, once again, Kim Langling, your host of Let Fear Bounce. Thanks so much for joining us today. Everybody, be well, stay well, and be blessed. And that is a wrap, my fearless friends. Thanks for bouncing along with me on another episode of Let Fear Bounce. I hope you're feeling a bit motivated and ready to take on any challenge that might come your way in the coming days. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode of Let Fear Bounce. Tune in each week for your dose of inspiration from my amazing guests from all over the world. So until next time, keep bouncing forward and stay fearless, my friends. Everybody be well, stay well, and above all, be blessed.